Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Renee Stubbs Tennis Podcast. If I sound like... who was a croaky-voiced actor?
Dame Maggie Smith.
Ooh, Sophia Bush. She always has that croaky voice as well. That's actually just how she sounds.
Miley Cyrus.
Ooh. Rawr, 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 rawr. Yeah, anyway, guys, I've had a cold. Had a little bit of a fun time down in Miami, and I suspect my 4 hours a night of average sleep probably induced this cold. Although I couldn't really talk about 5 days ago, so this is an improvement.
I was just really happy you recovered in time for our live podcast event.
Yes. So we did a live podcast here in New York City in the Gramercy Park area, in Gramercy Inn.
The Inn at Irving.
Oh my God. It was so great, wasn't it?
It was great. It was packed. We ended up selling it out. I mean, I thought we were going to be packed, but then in the forecast was calling for rain, and I was like, oh, it's the holidays. Who knows? Everybody turned up.
Everybody turned
up. On time, too.
What is it? Whenever they predict that with New York, it never happens. Remember that time they predicted there was going to be that huge hurricane that came through here and Times Square? I remember I wasn't living here at the time, and I remember I forgot my phone charger at like the hotel the week before, and I had to go out and get one, and I was in like the Times Square area, and I was like, oh my God, no one was out. And I was like, I've never seen anything like this. And then the pandemic came in 2020, and I was like, wow, that really can happen.
Right. Times Square can be emptied of people.
Can be empty. Anyway, I just want to say thank you to everybody that came to our podcast, and hopefully you're listening to this one now. But we had a blast. We really do appreciate you all turning up and coming, and we had such fun. And I know we didn't give it up for questions and answers in the crowd, which...
We ran out of time.
We ran out of time.
Because there was so much to talk about.
We didn't want to keep you there for hours listening to me dribble on in particular, but I hope I answered some of your questions when you came up to me to talk to me in person. But next time we do that, we'll make sure that I have a little buzzer on me that says, okay, now it's time to ask questions to the crowd.
No, we also need a bigger venue, I think.
We do.
Which is great. It's a good problem to have. And also, a lot of people have been listening for years and years, and a lot of people were pumped to, like I said, come out on a Sunday, which was awesome and fun, and we should clearly do more of those. So 2024, yeah. We hear you loud and clear, and Renee, in particular, has something special tucked up her sleeve. We'll not say more about it at this moment.
Yes.
But I do want to add, as a piece of cultural commentary for which I have become known, I do think weather apps are a scam. So just, the weather is pretend.
Weather scams worse than political polls.
Yes.
A year out.
That's right.
Or actually a day out of the presidential
race. There's just false flag information.
Every time I see a poll now, I'm like, whatever.
Sure.
Like, I don't even give a shit. After what happened to Hillary in 2016, I'm like, nah, I don't believe in polls anymore.
All you got to do is turn up. That's it. Whatever anybody says, don't listen to them.
Just turn up.
Just turn up.
Please, God, turn up.
Turn up to vote. Turn up to a live podcast. Just show up.
Did you hear what Trump said yesterday?
We can't. Please, I can't talk about Donald Trump on this podcast.
About Renee. Poisoning the blood. Oh, it's like, what the fuck? Anyway, all right, let's get to our podcast.
We're going to talk about tennis.
We're going to talk about the predictions and what we see 2024 looking like. We're going to start with the men. We usually don't start with the men. We usually throw them in at the end as a token.
Yeah.
But we do want to give them a bit of love today. And, of course, we're going to talk about Novak Djokovic and his dominance over the men's tour, which is pretty extraordinary.
Feels like he has a stranglehold over everybody.
36 years of age, wins 3 Grand Slams and the ATP Finals.
Came a couple of games away from winning all 4.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it, if he beats Jannik Sinner up those 3 match points in Davis Cup, he probably takes home the Davis Cup as well. But kudos to Sinner for hanging in there. But Jannik had a great year, end of year, but Jannik is going to have to prove himself over 5 sets in a Grand Slam before he can unseat the GOAT. Novak Djokovic, just what a year he had. And I predict that he's going to have as good a year next year because I think that he is primed for the last great run of his career.
Do you think it's because of
age? At some point, even for someone like him who is in phenomenal shape, look what he does. I mean, if anyone saw that 60 Minutes thing on him, I mean, he's so flexible. He's incredible. I think he can absolutely play until he's 38, 39, 40 quite easily. I just think at some point that starts to catch up to you a little bit in the age department. I mean, Andrej Pekovic mentioned that in our pod that we did, just evaluating his year and then talking about maybe if he can. And she said, look, at some point the age does catch up to you. I mean, you get one injury, it becomes another, et cetera. But right now he doesn't look like he's ever going to get injured. He looks like he's just going to keep going. So I predict that it won't surprise me if he wins as many Grand Slams next year as he did this year. And I think he's focused solely on winning a gold medal.
I was going to say, do you think the reason he will have a last great run is because of the extra motivation of this being an Olympic year, the chance for getting that gold medal, if not golden slam,
yeah,
which has only been done
one time
by Steffi Graf, which to me is the coolest record in tennis.
Yeah.
There are lots of records I like. I like overall tournaments one, which I think Martina Navratilova has. I think
yes.
There's so many different kinds of ways to slice.
And Jimmy Connors, it's the only record that Novak doesn't have or have a gold medal, but the total ATP Tour wins is still Jimmy Connors, which is fucking crazy. Like,
we never talk about Jimmy Connors.
We never talk about Jimmy Connors.
As a person. Probably because he's not super well liked, but you know, you can't. His bio.
He's polarizing.
He's polarizing. Yeah, actually, not unlike Novak. Although, yep, you know, Jimmy, I think, is much less of a gracious
loser
than Novak is, and he's certainly.
Novak is definitely one of the best losers. I mean,
yeah, he's a good sport towards his opponents, whereas
always.
Jimmy Connors. It's
would rather kick you in the balls and then walk off the court.
Which maybe speaks to the fact that he doesn't have a ton of friends in tennis who like still want to see him around. Because remember, he was like coaching Maria Sharapova for a hot minute.
Andy Roddick.
He coached Andy Roddick for another hot minute. Yeah. I think he's like kind of around. Like sometimes you'll see him at slams and you'll kind of be like, oh yeah, Jimmy Connors.
I played
Connors.
Team tennis with Jimmy.
How was that? Was he a maniac?
He was fun.
Yeah,
there's
I bet.
A few things that came out of his mouth that I was like, oh, okay, not politically correct.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me one bit. I mean, he's from kind of like the wrong side of the tracks in St. Yeah. Louis. Like, he's not from a country club.
No.
Which I admire about him.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's not get derailed by Jimmy Connors. But that is a cool record. The other record that I love, like I said, is Steffi Graf's Golden Slam. And, you know, it is certainly highly likely that Novak will be the favorite going into the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
It will be on clay. It will be in Roland Garros. Getting the Golden Slam is such an insane feat. Yeah. I don't even know.
Well, I mean, a calendar Grand Slam, first of all. I think his mindset is, look, I know that I can win all 4. He knows that. He came so close to doing it a couple of years ago when Medvedev beat him in the final of the US Open. I think he was ragged after the Olympics
yep.
in Tokyo. I think mentally he was probably just absolutely fried by the time he got to that final. We saw that in his demeanor. He was just defeated in mm-hmm. every sense of the word. And I think he's going to go into this year very set for all the Grand Slams and the Olympics. I think he'll set his schedule. I think he probably learned a lot about not overplaying like he's done, mainly on his own volition, really, of not being able to play Indian Wells and Miami because of the vaccine status of the US still, blah, blah, blah. And I think if he was smart, he would actually look at that and be like, oh, I don't need to play every single
Yeah, there's a good lesson there,
tournament.
Actually.
I just need to concentrate on the Grand Slams, which I think he'll do. And then I think he'll center his brain and his emotions around the Olympics as well.
Do you think You said you thought he was going to win the same amount next year. Three.
Yeah, I think he can win the same
amount. Well, obviously he can win anything. Yeah. But what, if you had to say which one you thought he was the most vulnerable out of the four, it's certainly not Clay.
Well, I mean, straight open, he's won 10 times. I do think that Yannick Sinner is going to be a real threat for him down there.
You do?
It depends on the speed of the court. If it's faster, I think Yannick really has a chance to sort of really push there. And I think if it's a little bit slower, I think Alcaraz has a chance to beat him there. But, you know, he's virtually unbeatable in Australia. He has unbelievable support down there. And I think that the likelihood of him winning 11 down there is really good. I think obviously the French Open's been the toughest because of Nadal, but is Nadal going to be a factor again this year? If he's playing it and he's healthy, clearly he's the favorite to win the French Open again. But
you think so? Wait. Let's segue Nadal? To Nadal. Because yeah,
absolutely. I mean, depending on how much tennis he gets and if he's healthy
going
into the French Open,
there's
no question. Because whenever you step on the court at some place, you've lost, what, twice in how many years? Like, you feel pretty good going in there. So I think physically, if Nadal is prime to go and he's healthy and he's had a lot of matches under his belt enough when he gets there, there's no question he's the favorite, just like Novak is in Australia.
I love Rafa. Everybody, I mean, I think most people do. It is hard to imagine given the physical status of how he has sort of broken down, not only throughout his career, but especially in the last like year and a half. And I think for me, yes, it's encouraging to see him bashing balls in videos and training, and you know he was at his academy in Mallorca.
Well, did you hear
he was
what
in Dubai.
Carlos Moya said?
And Carlos
Moya said,
his coach,
"I wasn't
said
really
stuff.
Expecting a lot of great things in Australia because, you know, I don't think tennis is going to be there." Blah blah blah. Now I've changed my mind after the last couple of weeks of practice. So he's seeing something in Novak Rafa that he feels really confident about. I don't think he's going to win the Australian Open clearly, but I think that he, without question, if he gets enough matches under his belt and he feels good physically, there's no question he's still the favorite.
My concern is just more like he's, given how difficult it is to come back for injury, especially later in your career, especially the types of injuries he's had, you know, getting to the French, the sort of rest versus rust thing that we always talk about with, you know, players who take a significant amount of time off, you know, like I think for him, it's hard to imagine just he is capable of reaching the peak of his physical form anymore. But maybe I'm being a negative Nancy and I, you know,
well,
I just want to protect my heart because I don't want him to
come
back and then fall short, you know?
I suspect, Caitlin, that you will not be disappointed because I think when you're that great and Rafa is great, he will not play if he is not prepared to go and win the tournament. So I think he's a little bit different. And then a lot of players like that, and I think he feels like if he's entering the tournament, he feels like he can win, just like Roger felt when he came back from that big layoff at the Australian Open when he won it. I know he's a bit younger and certainly still capable, but I think if Rafa physically can handle it and if he goes and gets enough matches going into the clay court season, he's still the favourite to win the French. Still a lot of tennis to be played, and clearly we have to wait to see how he physically backs up. But I've got to tell you, I'm so excited. As an Australian, the last time I saw Rafa in the Australian Open, he was walked off the court and he waved to the crowd in a way that I just was like, oh, he's never coming back. That's it. This is his last year. I don't think he's coming back. It was very much how I felt when Serena walked off the court at the Australian Open, when she did her little wave to everyone. Great players don't wave like that when they leave the court. That's kind of like a goodbye.
Mm.
And Serena, when she lost, she fucking booked it out of there normally. This time she stopped and did a twirl and waved. And I went, that's the last time we're going to see her. And I was right. So I'm so happy for the Australian public that they actually get to see Rafa play down there and hopefully be fit. Because when he left there a couple of years ago, you know, with that groin injury, it was brutal to watch. I mean, I was literally courtside watching that, just going, dude, just stop. And, maybe, you know, he should have probably stopped because it probably exacerbated the injury that he had, clearly. So I think I'm just excited that the Australian public get to see him one more time because
think this is the
100%.
This is the encore year.
There is no way he's playing more than 1 year, and I will.
So let's say best case scenario, he comes back, he plays Australia, probably won't win it, but hopefully stays in good shape, gets into the clay swing, gets enough matches, hopefully, you know, like you're saying, enters the French with the intention to win it, and then as we noted, the Olympics is at Roland Garros. It's at the same venue. Do you think that's the...
That's it.
In a best case, that's it?
I think so. I think we're going to see Rafa play through Wimbledon, then play the Olympics, and then call it a day.
Do you think he'll bother with grass?
Good question. I don't know. You know, look, he still plays great on grass. Clearly, he's won Wimbledon a couple of times. I think he would like to, I think he'd probably like the chance to play there one more time as well. But I suspect that the Olympics will probably be his last tournament. I don't know this. I mean, I would love to see him play the whole year. So sure, we'll see what happens. But in the end, it's great to have him back. We're so excited to have Rafa back in the mix. And speaking of not being old and decrepit and wondering what the hell is going to happen next year physically, is Jannik Sinner. I mean, what an end of the year that he had. It was incredible. I think that win at Davis Cup and what he was able to do over the last couple of months, I think will give him so much confidence going into the Australian Open. And I really think that he can win a Grand Slam next year. And if he doesn't win it next year, it'll definitely be in the next 2 years. He's just too good. And it's just doing it over five sets is a whole different animal when you're playing against Novak or an Alcaraz. But in my opinion, I think that he now realizes that he can control his emotions. He can, you know, problem solve out there. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to let the nerves get the best of him in the biggest of times. And I think we've seen him lose a couple of really close matches, clearly against Alcaraz in that match of the tournament at the US Open a couple of years ago. We saw him lose to Novak over five sets at Wimbledon when he was up 2-0 in the semifinals. So I think he would have learned from all those losses and know what it takes now to handle himself in the biggest moments on court. And so I think he's going to be a real threat at the Australian Open. I certainly think he's going to be a threat going into the US Open next year, because the faster the court, the better for him. Hits the ball so flat and hard. But I can see him being a threat on any court, any surface, and, you know, great coaching. And so super happy that he's having the end of the year that he had, and I think he's going to be a threat in Australia.
Let's talk about the rest of the field in terms of who else is currently healthy and looking strong.
Are you saying that because you suspect Alcaraz is going to be having injury issues
again? I hope not. No, yeah, I hope not. I didn't actually mean
much.
We
haven't even mentioned him.
No, we haven't talked about Alcaraz because I do think, like, yeah, the physicality of the way he plays and the amount of injuries he's already had is, you know, something to certainly speculate about in the offseason. You know, Taylor Fritz has been injured. A certain player from Germany we don't talk about very often has been injured and came back. Dominic Thiem had a nice little sort of actually putting it together at the sort of mid to end part of last year. You know, Berrettini was out. He made a couple very strong runs, including, you know, final of Wimbledon. So, like, it's sort of more just like, how is the rest of the field in terms of separation? And, you know, speaking of Carlitos, his peak is up there with Novak.
Well, we know that.
On his best days. But can he get there consistently with his body the way that he plays?
Well, the difference maker between him, for example, and Sinner is that he knows he can win a Grand Slam.
Yep.
And he knows he can win because over five sets, it's a very different animal to beating someone over three sets. And so the one thing that Alcaraz has over everybody else other than Novak is he knows what it takes to win a Grand Slam, to manage his body, to manage his mind over seven matches, to win a Grand Slam over five sets. That is not a problem for him. And that is a huge advantage that he has over everybody else in the field, other than, of course, Novak Djokovic, who's done it 24 times and is, you know, the greatest player of all time. So I think, you know, as far as that's concerned, I think Alcaraz is still the man to beat outside of Novak because of that. Now, physically, yes, he's running into problems. I think physically I've talked about it before on the pod. He's like so energetic and running after everything and jumping around like a jackrabbit, you know, before matches and expending a lot of energy in ways that maybe he could tamp down slightly. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to completely go away from that because that's what makes him so great. Just like, you know, Rafa, how he's like so the bull, you know, all the time. I like that about him, but maybe he needs to bring that down. If he can stay healthy, if he can continue to, you know, progress physically, then mentally he knows he can win a slam and he obviously has the game. I think he has even more room to improve on his serve. I think his forehand can get a little bit better on a faster court. He needs to, you know, crack down on getting taken advantage of on that side on a fast court, something that Sinner does really well against him, for example. And even Novak flattens the ball out and takes advantage of a faster court against Carlos. But, you know, look, if he's healthy, he certainly is equal to Novak, that he knows he can win the slams. And that's a big thing. Novak, to me, is still by far the favorite, though. But, you know, Sinner has improved so much over the last couple of months. And I think for him, it's going to come down to mentally if he can do it over best of five sets and get to a final. You got to get to a final first. He's only made one semifinal where he had that, you know, incredible match against Novak at Wimbledon. But I think that he can go, if he can break through the barrier of a semifinal and get to a final, I think then the next step is, can he mentally withstand a best of five against a Novak, for example, or even an Alcaraz? And I think that he's getting to that point where he actually starting to believe in himself and not panic under pressure and not, you know, pull the trigger too early. And his serve is improved under pressure. His forehand is getting better. So all the little things that Darren has worked on with him and his other coach have worked on with him over the last 12 months, you're seeing them come to fruition now on the big stage.
Which is encouraging for anybody who, even at the recreational level, wants to get incrementally better. You know, working on stuff, it is a process. Trust the process. Keep working. And
well, look at
the
Novak.
Results take, you know, care of themselves, because I do think that there's something really profound about the concept of watching a pro not only be great to begin with, but working on things and getting even greater. Yeah. Like Andy Murray, for me, was the greatest, sort of most quintessential embodiment of that. He had to work literally for every tiny gain he made.
Yeah.
Because I think the temptation when you're watching, especially the men, the talent naturally just is at such a high level, you think, oh, well, all of these people are just otherworldly. No. And the truth is they're laboring really hard, persistently, with intention. And yes, of course, there are godly elements to certain parts of their games. But I do think, like, it's sort of nice to see somebody who's already good actually work really hard and see it pay off, like you're talking about Sinner.
You have to constantly, there's not one player in the world playing professional tennis that's not trying to get better at something every single day.
It's crazy.
And that's what people don't realize. Like, I played till I was almost 40. I was constantly working on things, constantly trying to get better, constantly knowing that where my weaknesses were. And every single player knows where their weaknesses are and knows that they need to improve on them all the time. And I think that's what makes greats great. You know, Novak has improved so much over the last 20 years. His forehand is so much more, his forehand to me is better than his backhand in some respects. You know, everyone talks about how great his backhand is, but his forehand is unbelievable. Like, he's put extra spin on it. He never misses it now under pressure. His serve is unbelievable. I mean, he spot serves as well as anybody that's ever served. I think the biggest issue is, like, he can hit a spot, boom. You know, and you think Novak's not a big server. No one ever talks about Novak's serve.
Yeah.
They always talk about, you know, the big servers. But
defense.
His serve is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so the guy never gets broken. So for me, he's improved so much. His volleys have improved outrageously over the last 10 years. And he comes into the net now. He knows when to come forward. Greats know where to improve their game and where they need to get better. And there's no doubt that Rafa and Roger made Novak better. And now I think the Sinners and the Runners and, you know, all these and the Alcarazes have made Novak even better, knowing what he needs to get better at to beat these young guys.
All right, we're reaching my capacity for talking about Novak as great as his game is. Let's talk about Runa a little bit, and then I want to talk about the American men. Runa, to me, has the farthest to go from where I think he can, not to say that I think his peak is the highest, maybe, but just more like, I feel like we're just at the beginning with Runa, whereas Alcaraz and Sinner, who are both sort of in his same age cohort, have maybe arrived a little bit ahead of him. Whereas
sure.
To me, Runa, it's going to be really exciting, especially with Boris,
yeah.
whom we all love. On
I
the bag for him in a way that I think will hopefully bring out what, you know, the next sort of chunk of potential, if not all of his potential.
Yeah, there's no question that having Boris is going to be a huge help for Runa. I mean, you know, he got rid of certain other coaches that will remain nameless. But you know, I think having Boris is going to help him manage his emotions, figure out game plans better, know when to pull the trigger, know what he needs to work on. His volleys will get better with Boris. His forward movement will get better with Boris. And that's something that, you know, someone that came into the net all the time, like Boris, you understand when to come in, what to come in on, all that sort of stuff. And that's the area that Alcaraz does better than anyone. And Novak is that they know when to come into the net and they're very capable at the net. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a difference maker between a lot of those guys. It's an area that Sinner will get better at as well with Darren, because Darren was a net player and he'll know how to come into the net, what to come into the net on, you know, what volley to hit. You know, it's funny that people go, well, what, how do they not know? You don't know. If you don't do it a lot, you don't know what shot to come in on sometimes. You don't know the volley that you could possibly hit. You don't know how to improve that technique on the volley. So I think that's all areas that Rune will improve on a tremendous amount with Boris, as well as the emotional side of it, because Rune is very emotional. He's emotional like Alcaraz in a lot of ways, because Alcaraz, but Alcaraz smiles through his toughness. I mean, he has his moments as well, but Rune gets very hyper and very anxious looking. And I think Boris will help him in that department. So I'm looking forward to all these young guys.
I also like how Rune is wearing his shorts very short.
Yeah, we know that you like the short shorts.
I do. I really like
the
short shorts.
We've been calling this for a while. We want all the manufacturers to shorten the shorts on the guys.
Look, I don't know what it's going to take.
And coming from two gay girls.
But we just want to see a little leg.
We want to see a little muscle is what we want
to
see.
We want to see a little more leg. Can we talk about Boris for a second?
Okay. Sure.
We can speed through this, but it needs to be noted that Boris is currently in a decently epic war of words with Nick Kyrgios.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Kyrgios is, you know, not shy about going after kind of whomever. And the reason I like this particular conflict...
Tit for tat.
Tit for tat is because it elucidates something that I feel like we have to sort of dig into as people who talk about the game, people who love the game, you know, the old guard versus the new, who would win, who's better, blah, blah. Because Nick's premise is basically like, oh, these old guys, they wouldn't stand a chance. Which, like, I'm less interested in that argument because...
It's stupid.
It's stupid, and well, full stop. That's all we can say. Like,
that's dumb.
Cool, go play five sets against Bjorn Borg with a wooden racket.
Yeah,
try to pass Boris Becker at the net when you're both playing with, you know, Donnays made from a fucking 2x4. You know, like, okay, cool. Like, talk your talk, whatever. If you don't have your nylon strings and your oversized racket head and your, you know, your...
Barely wearing grass court shoes on grass because you're just wearing that herringbone hoping to stay upright.
Exactly. Like, anybody who's ever tried to play a legend knows there's just an insane level of skill that you're not fully appreciating on TV because, you know, also the TV was really grainy. Like, even if you go back and watch the YouTubes.
Look, bottom line is, Caitlin, every decade, every sport, every player, they all get better. They get faster. They have better technique. They have better technology. They have better nutrition. They have physios with them all the time. They aren't going out till 2 a.m. and having a few too many drinks and then playing the next day. Like, every single era gets better. Every era gets more professional. You cannot compare the eras. It's just fucking dumb.
It's also really dumb. And I'm tempted to bring in like a non-tennis reference. Like, you want to tell me Jim Thorpe, a part indigenous person who ran track and was one of the, you know, greatest athletes of all time, you plunk that guy in any sport right now with all the technology and tools and mental training and equipment, and he wouldn't dominate? It's just, what's the point of this? Especially coming from Nick Kyrgios, where you're just kind of like, dude.
He's not even playing. The reason why Nick isn't playing is because he's injured. And why is he injured? Because the guy didn't invest in himself for the, you know, 5, 6, 7, I don't know how long he's been playing professionally, in taking care of his body. He's barely gets in the gym. I mean, he started to when he had that great run and got to the finals.
And look what happened when he did.
He was in bloody great shape and he was working hard.
It
was putting, you know, getting all his shit done. But like, Nick, you didn't invest in yourself in the gym, you know, having a physio with you. I mean, he had a physio with him for the last few years, but like having a fitness trainer with you, you didn't have a coach, like all the things that all the professional athletes and tennis players have done. And you can say, oh, I made a final of Wimbledon basically with nobody, with no training. It's like, well, that's not something to be proud of. And that's not true because you were in shape when you made the finals in Wimbledon. So everything since then and before then, you didn't invest in yourself. And then therefore your body is breaking down. Duh. It's because tennis is a really fucking hard sport to play physically. And if you don't invest in yourself and take care of your body, it will betray you. And that's what's happening right now. So stop comparing greats. You're not a great. If you were a great and a 120, if Novak had said, they wouldn't have, no, you know what? Novak would never say that about a Rod Laver or a Pete Sampras, because the greats respect each other.
Because they've been there.
And they know.
Right.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And somebody was, you know, so this has gone on and back and forth, and the two of them, and, you know, Boris has been like, stick to your OnlyFans, and Nick is like, I sell more tickets than you do. And it's kind of like he's, you know, arguing that he's brought a lot of new fans to the sport, which, yeah, great. And that's what a lot of us like about him. On the other hand, you know, you can't sell tickets when you don't play.
Yeah.
So I just sort of want to say, like, hey, we're excited to watch everyone play tennis. And if you're not up for playing tennis, maybe, you know, quit the jibber jabber and don't go after Boris of all
people. Well, don't go after Boris. Boris, I mean, I don't understand. Nick probably doesn't remember, he's too young, how great Boris Becker was.
I don't know that he...
And how popular he was. Well, oh, my God.
I think a lot of these young guys don't know their history. That's more the issue.
No, clearly not. No, some of them don't. Most of them do, which is why they don't give Boris Becker shit about anything or any era about anything. So let's just drop that. But I'm looking forward to Boris making a huge difference for Runa.
Me too. I would love to see Runa come into more of his potential. Have we talked about the men enough?
We have. I just want to throw out a little thing. Ben Shelton, American tennis. I think, you know, one of the things about Ben that I think that Ben has probably the best chance to win a Grand Slam. And I probably wouldn't have said that a year ago.
More than Taylor Fritz, more than Francis Tiafoe.
Yes, because I think he has the chutzpah to believe that he can. And I think he has the weapons. He has the serve, clearly. He has the forehand. When Alcaraz says he's never played against a guy that hits the ball harder, I believe him. Mm. I think that he has the tools. And I think now he has the belief in himself. You know, winning a Grand Slam over best of five sets, seven matches, is a whole different ballgame. But I actually think that he has the potential to do it. I think he has more potential than any of the other American guys. And not because I don't think they're capable, but to win seven matches again over five sets is a very different tall task. Taylor loses his shit too much in five sets. He's got to bring that down. You know, Francis, you know, he's been struggling now for the last 6 months. He's got to get himself in order if he wants to win seven matches. And Tommy Paul, over five sets, seven matches against the greats, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, it's a tall order.
So I just think Ben has the ability to be able to do it, and I think he has the weapon. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do this year. This is his sophomore year.
And so, Australia is where he had his first real big run.
And he struggled after that. He barely won two matches in a row until he made a great run again at the US Open.
Right.
And then I think he learned a lot about himself there, and then I think he went on then to play a great fall.
Yep.
So I think he learned to sort of, you know, shut up with put the phone down. I think he decided to sort of put that aside. He was getting too much negativity around that, and he's just going out and winning matches now, and I think he's a real threat going forward in any Grand Slam. So
all right, well, you're welcome, men.
You're welcome,
this
men.
This is the most we've talked about you probably ever.
Yeah, probably ever.
And ever will again.
Let's get to the chicky babes. let's start with Iga.
Is that an Australianism again?
Chicky babe. Yeah, chicky babe. Listen, Iga, I'm looking forward to it. I think Iga's going to have a great year. I think Iga's going to have a better year next year than she's had ever. And that's a big statement.
Yeah.
Because winning 37 matches in a row is really hard to do. I don't think that's going to happen again. But I do think that she would have learned so much about herself this year with coming back. Listen, she was overwhelmed at the start of the year. I know that after the Australian Open, after she lost, I had a conversation with her. And look, I think she was so worried about all the points that she had to defend and how am I going to play 30, how am I going to win 37 matches in a row again? And how am I going to have that kind of year again? And I think it overwhelmed her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it got to her. And I think she learned a lot about herself in 2023 is that, oh, I might not have the greatest run again and win all these tournaments again like I did last year. And I didn't die.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be okay. So how am I going to approach 2024? I'm going to go into 2024 like I did, knowing the downward slide I could have. I also know how to win 37 matches in a row. What have I learned about myself in 2023? It's that I don't need to panic if I don't win everything. And I think that she's gotten maybe into a better mind frame, match in and match out, to not panic too much about the worst case scenario. So I think that she's going into 2024 having learned so much about herself in the last 3 years, about what it takes and what is not what she should do, which is panic, and know how to play these big hitters, know how to step up on a faster court, and learn a little bit more about herself. And she knows how she's going to win the French Open again. I think of all the players, who's going to win a Grand Slam next year that won one this year? Marqueta, Sabalenka,
Coco,
and Coco.
You like think all of them are going to repeat?
Who's going to win next year? Who's going to repeat that next year?
Well, Sabalenka should have won at least one other one. So to me,
should have, could have, would have.
Yeah, Caitlin? but that was a circumstantial. Listen,
is it?
Yeah,
circumstances are part of tennis.
Of course,
and if you can't handle the crowd at the U.S. Open, if you lose your shit at the French Open, up 5-1, was it 5-1 in the third?
Yeah.
Against Muchova, like you got to be able to control yourself and manage those moments.
For sure. But the reason I'm actually banking on Sabalenka to do it is because, in my view, just like you're talking about with Iga freaking out and, you know, learning some equanimity in the toughest of moments, I think Sabalenka overcame the stupidest, hardest, dumbest thing that can possibly happen to an athlete, which is getting the yips on something routine like your serve. Like, to me, that fortitude and just still sort of getting through it,
yeah.
I'm not sure that she's an intellectual. I'm not sure that she's, you know, there's a lot inward when she's meditating and looking. But I do think that she's confronted some hard things, and my hope is that being in the position to win, certainly one Grand Slam final that she probably should have won. Nothing against Coco whatsoever. I think everybody's preferred outcome outside of,
Sabalenka
herself and maybe Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports was that Coco was going to win. But I think, you know, Sabalenka should have won that match, and she probably should have won at least the semi against Mukova and the French.
Listen,
to me, I think she's come closest and she's beaten some interior demons that might prove possible, because she certainly, to me, has the most upside of all the other players.
I think she's going into the Australian Open feeling great, because it's a tournament that she loves to play, and she clearly knows going into it that she can win the tournament. So I think she's absolutely on equal footing to Iga to win the tournament as far as favorites. There's no question about that to me. But she does have, and I call it scar tissue, on her brain about the losses that she had this particular last year in 2023, you know, that loss to Muchova, the loss to Coco, that's scar tissue. So you have to chip away at that, I say. If she can chip away at it, like
she
did to win the Australian Open with the serve yips, and she handled all her emotions to win the tournament.
And also keep in mind, before this, she had never gotten past a semi before that this past year. So I do think she's somebody who just like beasts her way through it.
Yeah. If she can chip away at that scar tissue and not let it affect her in the big matches going forward, then there's no question that she can win one, if not two, if not three Grand Slams next year. There's no question about it.
Because she's certainly more fun.
She's a lot of fun. You know, look, Rybakina, a lot of injuries in 2023. If she can get herself, you know, injury-free, a little bit like Alcaraz, then she absolutely has the game to win on any surface, except maybe clay. And so she'll be a threat in Australia if she's emotionally and physically ready to go. Jessica Pegula, you know, has to prove herself by getting past that quarterfinal. Talk about scar tissue. Oh my God. But if she can break through that quarterfinal, I really think that she can win a slam if she can break through that final. like that quarterfinal, because I mean, I'm not comparing myself to a singles player getting through this, but I went through a period, I think it was like 6 or 7 quarterfinals myself in doubles. And once I broke through that quarterfinal, then it was just like, oh, okay, I'm good. Like, let's go. And I almost won my first Grand Slam right. by doing that. Lost in the finals of the US Open.
It's about belief, right?
It's about belief. And once you break through that, and she knows she can beat any of those players playing on tour. So when you know you can beat any of the players playing on tour, then you know you can win a Grand Slam. And that's key. And so if Jess can break through the quarters, I think that she can win a Grand Slam, but she's got to break through that quarterfinal.
And
she should have done it. Talk about shoulda, coulda, woulda. I mean, come on. Up 4-1, points for 5-1 against Vondrousova. And, you know, Marquette goes on to win the tournament. That's a match that definitely mentally would fuck with you.
I actually think Jess Pegula is most likely to win Wimbledon.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what she should have won possibly last
because
year.
Because of the Vondrousova match, but also just because she's like pure ball striking, yeah. You know.
She can win on any surface.
She can, except, obviously.
Look, the French, no chance. And she'll be the first to probably admit that. Although she had a great couple of tournaments on clay last year.
Let's talk about Naomi Osaka.
Naomi and Kerber coming back.
I mean, Kerber coming back is great. I can't imagine, just because she's a little bit older and I think her peak is lower. Love Kerber. Love the angles. Love the crouch. Love the lefty.
She loves Australia.
Yes. It's, to me, more dynamic to think of what Naomi has in store for us.
Listen, I tell you what. Seeing Naomi practice the other day on her Instagram, holy shit balls. And yes, she's so young still. Much like how Kim Clijsters came back at a very early age after having a kid and dominated after that. That's really where she had her best results. And I think for Naomi, if the game is there and physically she's able to go, look out. Because I wouldn't have said no chance at the Australian Open. Like, she's got to have time to get in. I don't know. Like, if she gets her teeth, talk about somebody who knows how to win a Grand Slam. She's won 4 of them. So she's coming
back.
And
she did it in pretty quick order.
Yeah, and Australia is her favorite.
My thing about Naomi is just the belief. Because I think it got really sad watching her the last couple of years be sad.
Yeah.
And
well, I think, listen, having she's going to have to mentally adjust her brain. And I think she has already. I think having a kid, you realize there are way, as you know, Caitlin, there are way bigger fucking things in life to stress about.
For sure.
Like, is my kid breathing?
Right.
Is my kid eating?
Right.
Is my kid sick? Where is my kid? You're not thinking about, if I lose this match, the press is going to come after me. I'm like, listen, say what you want about me. I'm going back to my kid who loves me unconditionally and who needs me. So I think things that will help her in a lot of ways, be a little bit more adjusted to the highs and lows. So I think, look out. I think Naomi's has a real passion again for the game. She wrote that nice little thing on her Instagram about thanking her fans for being patient. I think she's going to be really hard to beat. I really do. I wouldn't have said that a month ago, but watching her training a little bit, I know it's only one video that we got, but fuck, it looked good.
I also think there could be like a little psychological warfare at play, like Carlos Moya talking up Nadal, Naomi team releasing videos. Yeah. You know, there is something
we're coming for you, people.
Yeah, like, don't get complacent. We're coming back.
Now, Mukhova, I just want to throw her in there. What the fuck? Talk about somebody who can't get it right with injuries.
Yeah,
She's a perennial top tenner. She should be winning Grand Slam. She has a game to do all of it on any surface.
For me, even without a one-handed backhand, which she should have, she has the prettiest game on tour. Game on tour.
By far. I love watching her play.
Most tools, most versatility. What an incredible athlete.
But the wrist injury, man, having surgery and shit, that's like bad, dude. Yeah. That's bad.
It's
a bad injury for a tennis player.
Great run and then boom, and then injuries. And then, okay, great run, swimming boom. Back and then injured again.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
We have to just quickly throw in your favorite player.
Who's my favorite player? Oh, Chen Wen.
Chen Wen.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
You're sounding like you actually are pronouncing it right.
Chen Wen. Chen?
Yeah. Zheng. Zheng Chen Wen.
That's because you speak Cantonese.
Speak Cantonese. I speak a little Chinese. Mandarin.
What do you speak?
Mandarin. A little Mandarin. Oh. Not great.
I can hear you.
Great. I can
hear
you.
What up?
You know who couldn't hear each other? The people who were recording the first two chunks of this podcast in New York City together because our memory cards kept running out of batteries. So here we have time span. You're in 2024. I'm in 2023. finale for a year preview podcast. Since you're already in 2024, Renee, I want you to tell us what you see. Because right here in New York, I'm just having a beer in my apartment and it's still 2023. So I can't see around the corner.
I'd flick you around. I'm going to flick you around. Our viewers and our listeners, we don't have viewers yet. Our listeners can't see what I can see as well. I'm sitting here at Clovelly Beach in Sydney and I've had news already here. So it's a little weird that I'm already in 2024, you still are not in 2024. But yes, we have extended this podcast because of the fact that the two of us, we did have a bit of trouble finishing this podcast back in the day, but we're going to finish it today.
Well, the good news
and we
is
do have some things to report.
That's right. And everything we talked about is still relevant, which is looking forward to this year. And like a lot of things around this time of year, you know, it really sneaks up on you. We could record together. You were flying off back home to Australia and I was trying to get presents for everybody. So this is just what happens around this time of year. The good news is now we have actually completed our look at the men's field and the women's field. We do have a bit of an update about one of the athletes we talked about. That is Karolina Bukova. We were talking about how amazing she is, probably the best all around player on the women's tour. And now she has yet another injury.
Well, it's the same injury. It's just not recovered. She had the wrist surgery, which I was, to be quite honest with you, a little surprised that she was coming back to play this early because, quite honestly, it's just it's a devastating injury for a tennis player. I know myself, I had a wrist injury and I was out 7 months with that wrist injury back when I was, doing quite well in singles. And it really kind of ruined my singles career, to be quite honest with you. So I feel badly for her. I know that she's just one of these players that just keeps getting injured. She's kind of like the Del Potro of the women's tour. But, look, let's hope that she can get back to the form that she showed in 2023 into 2024, because it's just a shame what's happening to her. Because, as you said, one of my favourite, if not my favourite, women's player to watch just because of her ability around the court. But sadly, she won't be in Australia, so we send her all our best. Look, we've got a couple of upsets already early in the United Cup with Katie Bolder beating Jessica Pegula in a really great three-set match the other day. So it's all happening already. Tennis has started down here in Australia and I can't wait for it to begin. As I said, it's already started down here in the great country of Australia summer.
The great country of Australia in Australian summer. Two matches that I took notice of. Jasmine Paolini got a nice win against mm-hmm. Angie Kerber, who comes back after having a little one. And Naomi Osaka, yep. as we speak, is taking the court right now. So it'll be interesting to see how yep. she fares. But I mean, for me, just the lack of time to get any kind of emotional catharsis before you're already thrust into the play is like so jarring. Don't get me wrong. I love having tennis on my TV at all times. Like it seems like any time of year, any day of year, whether it's the Challenger Tour or some exhibition or anything, like there's just really not really even a day off. And I feel like that was especially true this year. I was watching, Aryna Sabalenka and Ons Jabeur play Christmas night. It was in Saudi 26th of Boxing Day, but like just, there really hasn't been a break at all. And so for me, it's just more like,
I would say, especially for the men, I feel like, Novak's, going to take the court. I did watch Rafa play his doubles yesterday. He looks fit and healthy and happy. He didn't get the win, but had a tough doubles match against Max Purcell and Jordan Thompson, both very good Aussie doubles players that play quite a bit together. And let's face it, Rafa was playing with 41-year-old, essentially hitting partner, his old doubles partner in Mark Lopez, who was looking a little slow out there. Yeah, he wasn't his sprightly self. So I would say that Rafa would be pretty happy with just getting one match under his belt. And of course, he goes into playing qualifier Dominic Thiem in the first round in Brisbane. So it'll be awesome to see those two going at it. But Rafa looked happy, looked healthy. And just a little thing on Angie Kerber, I did notice after the match when she did lose to Paolini, she looked happy. You know what I mean? She shook hands and Angie Kerber's not that type of person that usually shakes hands and smiles and looks pretty happy. So I think she's kind of adjusted to the fact that she probably feels good about being back on the court, being back on tour. Very different perspective now being a mom, as Naomi Osaka's talked about already in press how she feels very differently. Being a mom, life has changed. And as you know, Caitlin, you know, when you have a kid, sort of things change in your life very quickly. So it's nice to see them back out there playing. All of them look good. All of them look healthy. So nice to see Rafa, Angie, and of course, Naomi Osaka back. But we'll see how they go at the Australian Open, because that's really the big test, particularly for Rafa in best of five sets. I think for the girls, it's a little different when they're playing best of three. And I think, you know, Angie looked fit and healthy and happy. And word on the street is that her coach, who was longtime coach, and Torben Belts, he said that she's looking really good and really likes her chances to do well in her comeback. So we'll see. Wozniacki sort of throwing down the gauntlet of playing well, and Svitolina obviously coming back as well. So we've got four really terrific mums, you know, going to go battle at the Australian Open. So let's hope they don't play each other in the first round.
Let's talk about, not playing each other in the first round, like Rafa's got Dominic Thiem, which is a rematch of a French Open final, which is crazy that's the first round. But I do think, like, a little shout out to the parents, especially the mums who have had children in their bodies, because getting those bodies back into fighting form is no small feat. But I do think, like, there is a little bit of a parent perspective there, if I may, which is just sort of an energy I'm bringing into 2024. I don't know if you want to embrace this kind of energy, but something tells me you might, which is when you get to be a parent, you're just kind of like, you know what? Let them. Like, people want to talk shit? Let them. People want to come at me? Let them. People want to do whatever they're doing? Let them. You know, Angie Kerber, my favorite was when you said she wasn't known for put a big smile on her face and shaking hands after a loss. I can remember a few frosty moments with Angie Kerber at the net. And, you know, Naomi Osaka certainly has had her share of kind of talking about some haters through the years. And I think, you know, one of the things I would like to see both of them in their comebacks, just, you know, let them. Just do what you're going to do. Take care of business. Go home, see your kid. Anybody else wants to do whatever they're going to do, let them.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, you know, you get so caught up in your own BS, right? And importance. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, wait, I've got to keep that kid alive. You know, I was talking to my best friend the other day about, you know, when she had her first kid. And she said the only thing she worried about once it was born was, I've got to keep this kid alive. How am I going to keep this kid alive? You know, so I think their perspectives as far as being a tennis player are very different now, in knowing that there are way more important things in the world and in life than winning and losing a tennis match, and caring about what the public say and what a person in the press room says.
One of my favorite practices that my wife Claire has started, and I would love for us to end this very special time-spanning multi-continental episode, perhaps the first episode of the new year, the last episode of the past year, who can say? Instead of making resolutions, my wife makes, she delivers resolutions for other people. So she'll say something like, I would really like for you to not leave the dinner table until everyone's finished eating, to me, because I'm a little neurotic and I start tidying already. For example, I told my son I would like for him to stop screaming when any button or any beeping sound happens in the entire apartment, and he's like ready to run for the hills. So if you could make some resolutions for people in the tennis space, maybe they're players, maybe they're governing bodies, you know, in the spirit of let them, people are going to do what they're going to do. But I feel like this, the Renee Stubbs Tennis Podcast, should have a few resolutions for our tennis folks as we, you know, clear out the energy of 2023 and make way for the energy of 2024. I'll start. Hey, what a great time it would be for the tours to really get it together. I'm not here to talk any smack. We talked plenty this year. There's new leadership. There's changes, especially on the WTA side. What a good time to get it together, tours, and figure yourself out and figure out how to cooperate. That's just one that's top of mind that feels a little apolitical at this point. But over to you. Anything that's rumbling around in your mind as a resolution for others?
Oh, well, you know, I think you've already touched on it. We have our thought processes when it comes to the tours and the leadership of those tours. I would like to see the year of the Olympic Games not have Davis Cup or Billie Jean King Cup. I think that needs to go, the year of the Olympics. I think we have way too many weeks in the schedule, and I think a lot of players feel really, as they should, as I did, really responsible of playing for their countries and representing their countries, and they take a lot of pride in that. And I think that, you know, when the Olympic gear is on, I think that we should probably scrap the Davis Cup and Billie Jean King Cup, because I think that would really help in the weeks and the calendar being already really long for those players, especially when you think about the really great players that are playing five, six matches every single week to win tournaments, or four or five matches to win them. So that one, yes, tours need to get their, you know what, together, the leadership of the WTA gone, get some new blood in there. The last thing I would like to see, speaking of haters, I would like to see people calm the farm when it comes to abusing people online on the tennis Twitter, okay, or on the X or whatever. I would like to everyone appreciate their champions, appreciate their great players, you know, praise them all you want. But when it comes to your people that aren't your favorites, you don't have to trash them, okay? You can just leave that alone, be nice about your player, and not go after these other players. You don't know them personally. Like, calm the farm a little bit, right? No, if you're going to tweet something that's really aggressive, just put the phone down. Just
look at you. What a growth. This is what growth looks like, ladies and gentlemen. This is real growth. And I probably have been guilty about popping off in the past myself, and I'm going to take that advice and calm the farm, because one of the best things is I was – reminded watching some of these exos and seeing some of my favorite players come back. Dominic Thiem is coming back. Andy Kerber's coming back. Naomi Osaka's coming back. You know, like, I love tennis because I love how many different players I love. You know what I mean? There's so many players to love. There's so many styles to love. There's so many moments and matchups and situations to love. And that to me is like the most fun thing about tennis. You can't have the same match twice, even if it's the same two players or same four players in the same place in the same tournament. It just, there's no account for what happens on the court, and it's all magical, and there's so many players that I love, and that's really what I'm going to be excited about. I'm already excited about it now. So that's for me like the good note. So calm the farm. Everybody wants to while out, let them. And we're going into the 2024 with a lot of I think positive energy. I feel really resolved. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel good. Our fashion connoisseur, our fashion attaché, Andrei Petkovic, and I will hopefully, we're not going to say we're going to do it every single time because it's based on our schedule, but we are going to try and facilitate a little 10-15 minute update every day in Melbourne on the Renee Stubbs Tennis Podcast. We'll get it out to you. We're going to film it. We're going to get it out to you. Sadly, Caitlin is not going to be in Melbourne, but Petco will be. So we're going to get a little bit of love out to you guys on a daily basis and give you a little, just a look into what happened at the Australian Open every single day. So I hope everybody enjoys that when we get to it. Listen, in the meantime,
now that you've said it,
I put out on the old.
You got to do it.
I got to do it now. But I tell you, no, Petco's already, she's already texted me and said, we're going to do this. And I said, yep, we're going to do it. So another thing just to add, I did put out on the old socials that I really appreciate everyone, because I know you, Caitlin, will be one of these people that will be watching us on ESPN. I believe it's on ESPN2 through the whole entire tournament. Our numbers, we will be live. I know it's really early in the morning for everybody, et cetera, but we do appreciate you getting up and watching it live with us, because it's going to be impossible not to know those results the next day if you put a hand on a phone and you turn it over if you're a tennis enthusiast, because you'll know the results. So we appreciate everyone getting up early in the mornings and all that sort of stuff to watch ESPN's coverage. And we are all going to be down there. We are missing Chrissy Evert, obviously going through her treatments once again. So we send her all our best. And thankfully, she caught it early enough. So hopefully she's going to be all good. But we are very grateful to hear that. But she will be the only one on our talent roster that won't be down in Melbourne. So we were going to be bringing you all the live love of tennis to your screens at ESPN. So hopefully everyone will join us on that. But in the meantime, Happy New Year, everybody. Caitlin, you're an hour or so away, are you not?
I'm 3.5 hours away from New Year's, and I am probably an hour and a half away from bed. So that's really how I like to roll. We've already celebrated the countdown. London's, when you're a parent, speaking of, you tend to tune into the 7 p.m. London midnight broadcast, at least if you're on the East Coast. They did an incredible job. Can't imagine New York topping that. So I'm not going to stick around to find out. But I do feel particularly grateful.
Best New Year's Eve celebrations. Come on, our Sydney. Going to make a blanket statement.
Nope.
The Sydney Harbour has the best fireworks in the world, and I will not hear you say anything differently.
No. China invented fireworks. They put on a great show. I will say that London's was particularly good because they had a musical medley heavily involving.
Did you watch Sydney?
Yes, I turned on CNN and they're just playing all of them. So I watched Sydney. Sydney's very good. It's a beautiful backdrop. But the musical medley that London put on was, they had Fatboy Slim, they had Massive Attack, they had the Spice Girls. They had Dua Lipa. It was a real, the music.
Oh, that's what got you. The Dua Lipa. Got you.
So what?
All right, everybody.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening the entire year. Thank you so much to everyone who came out and packed the joint for our live podcast. You heard it here. So now Renee has to do it. Recording, and I have to edit it and produce it unless I can come up with somebody else to labor on that effort, which maybe I will. You're going to hear a very, very regular podcast from Australia. And if there's anything you and I need to check in on before that, let's make time to do it, even in our very different time zones. Sound good?
Sounds good. And anybody who wants to write us on X as a positive, let us know what you want to hear. And we'll hear from you in 2024. We appreciate all your support of 2023. Have a great new year, everyone. And here's to a great tennis season in 2024. Caitlin, my friend,
see you
soon, mate.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.